Welcome to Poptopia.
Welcome to Poptopia, your podcast for all things pop culture. I'm your host, Paul French, and it is Monday, October 13th, 2008. On today's show, the Apocalypse Watch continues for week two, 30 Rock rolls out the stunt casting carpet, and Iron Man kicks off a movie marathon, the likes of which the world has never seen. Yeah, that's actually, let's lead with that. So, Iron Man was the first movie for a couple of people who have broken a Guinness World Record. The two people, Claudia Wavra of Germany and Suresh Jaquim of Toronto, claim to have broken the world record for continuous movie watching after seeing 57 films in 123 hours in a plastic glass house in New York's Times Square. Guinness World Record spokesman is saying that it appears that they may have broken the record, but it will take a couple of weeks to officially verify. And they started this on October 2nd, and there was eight of them that started out by watching Iron Man. And after 72 hours, there were only two. And actually, they ended off by watching Thelma and Louise until the end, which was 3:10 p.m. on Tuesday. And actually, the neat thing is Susan Sarandon actually dropped off the final movie for them to watch. Of course, she was in Thelma and Louise. But here's the interesting part. Here's the rules. Basically, you had to watch each movie until the last credit rolled, and the competitors were not allowed to divert their eyes from the screen. And they got like 10-minute breaks in between movies. And so that's what it was. And basically, they may have broken a world record. There you go. I don't know what else to say about that. In other news, Josh Brolin is rumored to be following up Oliver Stone's W with basically playing a different cowboy, and this time it would be comic character Jonah Hex. And he is apparently in talks, according to Variety and The Hollywood Reporter, to play the Western bounty hunter in a film version, which will be written by Mark Neville Dean and Brian Taylor, who also wrote and directed the movie Crank with Jason Statham. They will also direct this movie. And so basically they're saying that currently the characters in a monthly series written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray for DC Comics. And there's art by a variety of rotating artists such as Darwin Cook, Jordy Burnett, Tony DeZuniga, and Phil Noto, to name but a few. Palmiotti's reaction to the news, he says, well, if it wasn't enough that we got Mark Neville Dean and Brian Taylor writing and directing, I can't think of a better candidate than Josh Brolin playing Jonah Hex. Josh has the right deadly look in his eye and has already proven dozens of times, again and again, to be one of the most talented actors out there. This news has got Justin and I very excited on a number of levels, and if this is true, it's just plain awesome. Now, the really cool thing here is, I mean, you know, anyone who's read Jonah Hex and who has seen No Country for Old Men knows this is the right guy to play that part, so it should be a lot of fun. 30 Rock, getting with the stunt casting. It seems, you know, there was basically a vacuum in the stunt casting world. And, you know, once Will and Grace went off the air, it's like, where are these people going to get work? So the guest star hits keep on coming for 30 Rock. You've got Jennifer Aniston, Oprah Winfrey, and now Salma Hayek. She is signed on for a two-episode arc later this season, playing a character named Elisa, which will be a love interest for Jack Donaghy. Of course, that's Alec Baldwin's character. Tina Fey says, Salma is smart, funny, and gorgeous. I think she'll be a great, strong presence opposite Jack Donaghy. And Hayek says on her part, she says she's been a fan of Tina's talent both as an actress and a writer since working with her years ago on SNL. And I'm so excited to be part of such an intelligent, funny show. This will be her first TV series appearance since she recurred on ABC's Ugly Betty. And of course, she's one of the executive producers of Ugly Betty. And she appeared back in the 2006-2007 season. And she'll next appear on the big screen in Cirque de Freak, which is scheduled for release next year. So the new season of 30 Rock will start on October 30th, and appropriately to passing the stunt casting torch, Will and Grace cast member Megan Mullally will be guest starring in the premiere. Then the next week we see Oprah Winfrey, and later in the season we see Jennifer Aniston, and they haven't yet set an air date for Hayek's appearances. So there you have it. You know, I think if any show can pull it off and make it funny, it's going to be 30 Rock, so we'll certainly see. A couple of quick plugs I want to make for a couple of great independent comics that are coming out. First, The Contingent, number one, coming out in December, so you can get this ordered now. Forced from his Bolivian home to an America where superpowers, mechanical apes, and genetically altered monsters are the order of the day, will young Miguel Francisco accept the offer of a man who wants to make him a god, or will he embrace the harder path and the often inevitable cost of doing the right thing? The Contingent explores everything from the nature of heroism, love, and much more, all accentuated by big superhero fun. This is written by Zach Cruzy with art by Elisu Gouveia, and I'm probably butchering that name, also goes by the name Zoo, who did art on The Phantom, Cloudburst, and Project Elohim, and Javi LaPera. The item code for those of you ordering is OCT084283, and that's 32 pages of comic book goodness for $3.50. It's a lot of fun. Definitely should check it out, and you can actually see a three-page preview for this on myspace.com/thecontingentcomic. So definitely check that out. Zach's a great guy, and has put together a really, really cool book. I mean, it's you just never know what you're going to get when you get an independent book. And it's like, I opened this up and it was just fun from beginning to end. So definitely worth checking out. And that also brings me to another fine independent book that I want to bring some focus to, and that is Mercury and the Murd. And of course, the collected edition is available from dcbservice.com and heroescorner.com this October. You can order, and it'll come out in December. And this is, of course, collecting issues 1-4 of Mercury and the Murd. It's a perfect jumping on point for new readers who want to follow the exploits of Comic Geek Speak's own Adam Murdo, aka the Murd, and his new partner, Beck Mercury, as they attempt to solve a bizarre crime that takes place on the seedy streets of Dayton, Ohio. Follow Mercury and the Murd as they battle their way through ninjas, men in monkey suits, cosplay patrons, and more. And of course, the front cover is provided by Dave Dwanch, with artwork by Chad Ciccone, Dave Dwanch, and also a back cover and pinups by Flint Lockjaw. There's also additional pinups by various artists. And of course, it's all written by Sean Pryor. And for those who have already purchased issues 1-3, they've actually done some tweaking to give you a little bit more. And Chad Ciccone has gone back and redone some of the art in issue one. And, you know, I think Chad's art's great anyway, but he's really gone the extra mile with this and added all kinds of extra toning, and it just looks fantastic. So, but that's not all. If you purchase a copy of Mercury and the Murd, the collected edition, you'll also get a free Katie Cook print of Mercury and the Murd. And you just can't go wrong with a print from Katie Cook. She does great work. So 48 pages, and the suggested retail price on this is $3.99. DCBS and Heroes Corner are selling this to you for only $2.60. So definitely worth checking out. And you know, if you want to see even more information, go to pkdmedia.com and you'll learn a lot more. John's put a great book together, and I think it's really worth your time to check it out. Okay, so other stuff that's going on. I talked already about Josh Brolin, of course, before he puts on the cowboy boots to become Jonah Hex. He's of course playing the current president of the United States. Hey, I don't know if any of you heard. I think there's an election going on. Yeah, it's everywhere. And of course, this movie's coming out less than 3 weeks before the Americans select their next president. And of course, that's part of, I guess, a way of prodding voters to think about the past 8 years and the future. And so it's part drama, part satire. However, Oliver Stone is quick to argue that it is not a hatchet job on Bush. And so far, actually, critics are in agreement with what he's saying. Of course, this is coming out October 17th and is one of Fall's most widely anticipated movies. Stone says that whoever wins this election, Bush's impact has changed the world. The man has left us with three wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the war on terror, and the legacy of the preemptive strike. These are legacies that will haunt his successor for years, and it's good for people before the election to think about who they elected 8 years ago and about where we are as a country right now. Of course, he's got Josh Brolin in the title role, and we have Elizabeth Banks playing Laura Bush, and James Cromwell playing the elder Bush. And, the cast is just absolutely perfect. It's really good casting. And let's face it, a liberal-leaning director makes a movie about a conservative president, you know, you've got to figure he's going in with some sort of bias. However, early reviews are saying that the movie is a clear and plausible take on Bush's psychological makeup, and considering Stone's reputation and Bush's vast unpopularity, a relatively even-handed, restrained treatment of recent politics. It, of course, takes Bush's transformation from being a hard-drinking, privileged frat boy to a religious convert, his rise from Texas governor to U.S. president, and his decisions in the weeks ahead of the 2003 invasion of Iraq. It's based on books written by former White House insiders, and the filmmakers say that it's really intended to ask questions about a life misunderstood, which is, of course, a famous Bushism. Anyway, Dana Perino, Bush spokeswoman, is saying that the White House has much more important things to do than comment on this ridiculous movie. Yet Stone has said that basically they've parked their politics at the door. This is meant to be a fairly objective piece, and so far seems to be. So anyway, it's going to be really interesting to see how this does. You got to wonder, because a lot of people have said that movies about the Iraq War haven't done well, mainly because people are thinking, well, I can see this all the time. And let's face it, you're still seeing Bush all the time. You know, you're seeing the other two guys as well. But you know, is this going to be something that's going to drive people out to see it? Is this going to be something that is enough to make people want to see it, because they think that they've seen all of this before just by watching CNN? And that really comes down to the sort of the overall pervasiveness of big media. Anyway, just food for thought. Speaking of food, V is getting rebooted. Basically, as I say, hide the hamsters, the visitors are back. So basically, ABC is hoping to do for V what the Sci-Fi Channel did for Battlestar Galactica. And they're given the green light for a reboot of the 1980s franchise about alien lizards from another planet who take over Earth. It's going to be written and executive produced by Scott Peters, who was the big guy behind the 4400. And he's basically going to produce this with Warner Brothers Television. And, of course, Warner's were in charge of the original 1983 TV movie and its sequel. And, of course, the series that ran through the 84 to 85 TV season. So they're going to completely revamp the original, including changing the illusions that basically the whole thing alluded to the Holocaust, and now it's going to allude more to 9/11. Does that make it a bit too close to Battlestar Galactica? I'm not sure. So it should be interesting to check out. At any rate, Kenneth Johnson, who created the original V, has previously tried to get a new version off the ground, but he's not involved in this one. He was actually convinced that V should be a movie and discovered that Warner controlled the TV rights, whereas he owns the motion picture rights. So basically, you know, that's kind of where it sat for a while. Anyway, Peters came in and he had an idea for this, and they're going to let him make it happen. So we'll see when and how that all comes to be. Looking at the box office for this week, number five, we had Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, bringing in another $6.5 million. For a total of $20.8 million. And I do need to, at this point, make a correction to something I said last week. And this was pointed out to me by Justin from Memphis, who emailed me and said, you know, love the show, look forward to it every week. Just need to let you know, you called Michael Cera Gregory Cera. And you know what's really embarrassing about that is, years ago, I used to live down the street from the dude. I didn't actually know him at the time. So, I mean, not that would help any, but it's just kind of ironic that that's the guy whose name I get wrong. So it is Michael Cera. And of course, the actress that I couldn't remember from Nick and Nora, I remembered as soon as I finished recording the episode, is Kat Dennings. So there you go. But he also pointed out, and actually I'll come to this when I get to the top of the list. Number four is Eagle Eye for $11 million for a total of $70.5 million. Body of Lies comes in at number three with $13.1 million. Quarantine at number two with $14.2 million. Beverly Hills Chihuahua, number one again, $17.5 million for a total of $52.5 million. And as he said, I don't find it surprising or crazy that Beverly Hills Chihuahua came in at number one, nor a sign of the apocalypse. It is a kid's movie, so you're getting parents taking their kids, and I've heard some good reviews on it. Of course, the next day, Tim Robbins totally stole my thunder by going on The Daily Show and saying, of course, that it was a sure sign of the apocalypse. So Tim Robbins must be a Poptopia listener. Anyway, thanks to Justin for the feedback. Comments, as always, are welcome at poptopiapodcast@gmail.com, and have a great week.